sake of any time. Very, very appreciative that Rev Leibowitz is with us tonight. Especially, I just want to point out to everybody kind of the importance of what tonight, I think, says about everybody who's, Baruch Hashem, was joined for learning tonight. You know, Labor Day is a day that, you know, is off from the schedule. The calendar is, you know, it's off officially. Courses didn't happen today. And I can't help but keep thinking about how on campus, I think we would have just said, okay, we'll give this day off and we'll have Limud Torah, you know, tomorrow. We'll start again with the Shiurim tomorrow. And is there some like benefits of being on Zoom? The thought that wouldn't even cross my mind, how could we miss a night like this? And I was actually talking to someone this morning and they suggested to me, so, you know, while it's Labor Day and we don't go to work, you know, it's a day that's perfect for Avodas Hashem, right? It's the other type of labor that probably is the, worthwhile to invest in. And I just want to give everyone a Yasher Koach, and then we'll start with this year. You should all hear this Yasher Koach. It's worthwhile. That, like, this is Baruch Hashem what you're devoting your time to. This is what you're devoting your evenings to learning Torah together. And I want you to know that that's something that is noted and is clearly worthwhile. And we're all highly encouraged by it. So without further ado, taking up enough time, thank you, Rebbe, for being here of Leibowitz. Thank you for being with us yet again. And it's always a privilege to have you with us. And I'm going to put you on the spotlight here. But again, thank you for being here with us tonight.
My pleasure. Okay. Thank you so much, Rebbe Bernstein. And I have to say, when I saw the date of the shiur that you invited me to give, and then I realized that it was going to be on a legal holiday, I was also nervous. Is anyone going to come? So I'm very amazed at how many people have come to learn together. And you know, they used to always tell us when we were children that Torah never takes a vacation. There's never a day off from Torah. So I'm glad that we all have internalized that hashkafa, that there's never a day off from Torah, that we should always adrabah. When we have a day off, that's a time to be mechazik ourselves in learning Torah, because we don't have as many other things to do. So we can use our time to learn some more Torah. So Bernstein asked that I discuss some issue of halacha, and the particular request was not to give just like an overview, but to take a particular topic and delve into the topic, and maybe we'll end off at the end with a little bit of Divrei Hashkafa. So what I mentioned to him that I would do is discuss the idea of chumras of Aseres Yimei Tshuva, because what I understand, we had some very illustrious Rosh Yeshiva who've already spoken in this series about many of the halachos of Rosh Hashanah. So we're going to talk about the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. But then, as I started looking into it, I started to think, instead of talking about chumros of the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, maybe we'll save that for the Hashkafa part, let's talk about the chumra of Aseres Yimei Tshuva. The one that appears on the page in Shulchan Aruch, and the one that seems to be a major sugya in Shas that a lot of people don't have great familiarity with. So maybe we'll go through a little bit this sugya of Pas Akum, because there is a chumra during Aseres Yimei Tshuva that even if we're not makbid the whole year to avoid eating Pas Palter, all of a sudden comes Aseres Yimei Tshuva and we lay off the entiments, we lay off anything that is not made by a Jewish company or by a Jewish bakery, specifically when it comes to baked products. So where in the world does that come from? Is there a halacha like that? And what are the gedarim of that halacha? When do we have to observe this halacha? So there is. So let's go through the sugya carefully. And again, I'll try to leave time at the end for a little bit of divrei hashkafa relating to those chumros that we accept during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. So there is a gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah and Daf Lamed Hayam and Beis where the gemara teaches us a mishnah. Really, the mishnah tells us elu dvarim shel ovdei kochavim asurin ve'in isurin isra na'a, that there are some things that you can get from an idolater, from an oved kochavim, where even though they are prohibited, you're not allowed to eat them, they're mutter b'hana'a. There's no issur of getting benefit from them. You could feed them to your dog, you can sell them, you could do business, you just can't eat them. And on that list is hapas, bread from an oved kochavim is asur, but not asur b'hana'a. So the Gemara says, why in the world would it be asur? So the Gemara tells us that we were gozer al piton ushmanan mishum yenan, that they made a gezera that you're not allowed to have pas or shemen of an ovid kochavim because of a concern that will lead you to have yayin of an ovid kochavim, val yenan mishum b'nosehen, and if you have wine of an ovid kochavim, then you'll come to intermarry, val b'nosehen mishum davar acher. And as if that's not bad enough, that's going to lead immediately to Davar Acher. Davar Acher very often is a word that is a phrase that Chazal use that we would translate into English as the unspeakable, right? The thing that we can't, it's just so awful, we can't even say it. So Davar Acher over here means Avodah Zarah. That's something so terrible, Ayvei, that it's going to lead to Avodah Zarah. Sometimes Davar Acher means a pig. Sometimes, I have Davar Acher meaning a lot of different things, but it always means that which is unspeakable. So Chazal made this gezerah. It happens to be, it's interesting, the Gemara tells us that Pas and Shemen were two gezeros that were made together. Oil of an Ovid Chavim, but then a later Beis Din came along and got rid of the Shemen Gezerah. The Gezerah of Shemen has been abolished. A particular Beis Din that later became known as the Beidina de Shara Mishcha, they became known as a Beis Din that was Matir the oil. And in fact, Chazal tell us they were afraid to be Matir anything else, because they thought they would start to be known as a Beidina Sharia, that if they were Matir this big Gezerah against oil, and then they're going to start being Matir other things, everyone's just going to say, oh, they're the big Mekilim. And it used to be that was a bad thing, that if you were known as the big Mekilim, so nowadays you'd have lines out the door waiting for people to ask Shailas if you get known as the big Mekilim. Everyone knows who to call and who to WhatsApp for which kinds of Shailas, but they didn't want that kind of reputation. You don't want to be that person, and it does happen. You know, these things, people talk to each other. I just recently had a situation where someone a couple of years ago had asked me a very serious Shaila, and I paskened Kula. I'm sure I consulted with my Rebbeim. I can't imagine on such a serious shayla that I would have taken it on my own shoulders. I paskin l'kula, and just the other day, the person reached out to me. You know, I have a friend going through a similar situation. You never met her, you don't know her, but she'd like to ask you the shayla. I wonder why she wants to ask me the shayla. Maybe because there's a track record over here. So we don't want to be known as a Beidina Sharia. So that was the Beis Din that was Matir the Shemen. The Beis Din that was Matir the Shemen was never Matir the Pas. Pas remains an Isser. Pas Akum is an actual Isser. And this is Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Simon Kuf Yud Beis in Yaredeya. Si'if Aleph Asru Chachamim Lechol Pas Shel Amim of the Kochavim Mishum Chasnus. That the Chachamim forbade us from eating Pas of an Ovid Kochavim because of the concern that they will come to lead to intermarriage. And the Ramah adds, you know what? Even if there's no concern whatsoever of intermarriage, it's still going to be aser. What do you mean, no concern of intermarriage? The Shach in Sivkat and Dalet explains, Kigon, pasakomrin. If you have bread that was made by a priest, they make bread, but it's you're not going to marry their daughter. You know why you're not going to marry their daughter? Because they don't have daughters. The priests are celibate, and at least on the books, and therefore they're not going to have any children. So you're not going to. It's not going to lead to any sort of intermarriage. But still, it's aser mishum benos ovdik chavim in general. Shem ein lazeh yesh lazeh. Starting to break down these barriers between the Jewish people and the non-Jewish world around us will ultimately lead to more global kind of connectedness that is an unhealthy kind of connectedness that will lead to intermarriage. I think they say in the name of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that he pointed out that noticing what the intermarriage rate is in America, at the time it was approaching 50%, now I believe it's over 70%, the intermarriage rate in America, that probably we need to start being machmir about some of these Isurim that Chazal specifically put in place to avoid intermarriage. That sometimes we look for all the kulas around these things, and look what's happened. So it's something that's to our great distress and dismay that the level of assimilation in the United States. The Prima Gadim explains that Va'af Kuti She'ein Ovid Avodah Chavim Pito Aser, even if it's someone who doesn't actually do Avodah Zara, his bread is going to be Aser. So let's say it's a non-Jew who doesn't do Avodah Zara. What's a non-Jew who doesn't do Avodah Zara? Either someone who's just not religious at all, or let's say a Muslim. Islam is not Avodah Zara, it's Avodah Zara for us. It's an Avodah that is Zara Lanu, it is certainly foreign to us, and it's something that we're not allowed to do, but it's technically speaking not Avodah Zarah for a guy. And nevertheless, that's also included in Pasakim. So you're walking through the old city and you have those guys with the carts that are that are selling those delicious looking, I don't know, whatever they look like, breads that they're selling. That's a violation of Pasakim. Now, why did Chazal need to make this special gzeirah? L'chora, If I were to ask any of you, would you go into a non-kosher bagel store and buy bagels? Of course you wouldn't. It's not kosher. Why would you ever think that you need to make a gzeira? I can't have bread that's baked by a non-Jew because it's not kosher. I don't know what he puts in the bread. That should be the answer. Chazal have to make this new gzeira that pass from an Ovi Kochavim is a problem. So the Shach and Sifkat and Gimel explains in Simon Kufyud Beis that Avul Mishum Giulei of the Kochavim Lekel Amechash to Stam Kleinen B'nei Yomen. We're talking about people who took their bread very seriously. People who take their bread very seriously. I don't know if any of you have sourdoughs or got into this craze. This is like a thing that people do now where they nurture and nourish their sourdoughs, and you know, but this has been going on for generations, where there are sourdoughs that have been passed down in families for centuries that are still being used, and they're still, and so people who take their bread seriously don't put other chazarai into their bread. They're only putting in, you know, the purest and finest of ingredients. So what's the concern? Yeah, but maybe they're baking in tins and pans that also bake non-kosher food. So there is a principle in halacha called stam clay of the that we assume that a stam kli, that a typical kli of a non-Jew has not been used for non-kosher in the last 24 hours, and therefore whatever tam it's going to transfer, whatever taste it's going to give into the food, is not going to asu the food. The question though is, what exactly are we really concerned about over here? Are we concerned about marriage, intermarriage, or are we concerned about avodah zarah? It's such a strange gemara, no? The gemara tells us, I'm worried about the yayin and the shemen, I'm worried about the shemen and the pas, because of Yayin. Okay, why am I worried about Yayin? Because then you'll intermarry. Stop right there. You do not need to say anything else. Intermarriage is bad. It's the worst thing in the world. It's true. We have to admit that that when it comes to finding exactly where in the Torah says that you're not allowed to intermarry. It's subject to significant debate. Which pasuk in the Torah tells me that you're not allowed to intermarry? Is it Los Ischatein Bam, or is that only the Zayinumos? Is that only the Seven Nations? Is it based on the Maisa with Zimri and Cosby that, you know, Pinchas didn't kill them because they were doing a mitzvah, so it must have been that, or maybe that's only if someone does such an overt act publicly. You know, where exactly it appears in the Torah that there's an issur to intermarry is not abundantly clear, but it's pretty bad, right? Someone once asked Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, if a person is not going to be observant of the laws of Taras HaMishpacha, and we know that the Yisr of Nidos and Yisr Kares for both the man and the woman, Chiv Kares is very, very serious. But intermarriage is losasei. It's a regular lav minatora. It's not a Chiv Kares. So maybe someone who's not going to observe Taras HaMishpacha anyway should sooner intermarry than to marry a Jew and not observe Taras HaMishpacha. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that is very interesting, very nice halachic thinking, but it is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Meaning that is absurd, because intermarriage is the worst. You know, people used to sit Shiva for intermarriage. That used to be the practice. It wasn't working. You know, it used to be like it was meant to be a deterrent, and then it stopped working as a deterrent, so we don't do it so much anymore. But the Gemara should have stopped there. In fact, the Pesach Tshuva and Sifkat and Aleph and Simon Kuf Yud Beis writes that the gezeira is only for non-Jews, but Jews who are mechalei Shabbos b'faresia, even though they have the status of novid kochavim when dealing with wine, if a Jew is mechalei Shabbos b'faresia touches your non-mavushal wine, that's a problem. But their bread is going to be permissible because the whole purpose of the gezeira was really about intermarriage. It really, the Gemara didn't have to go any further than that. That was the real reason for the gezeira, and as long as you have a Jew who's making the bread, even if they're not religious, it's not a problem because there's no isser of intermarriage with someone who is Jewish, whether regardless of their level of religious observance. However, the Prima Gadim and others argue on this Pesach Tshuva, and they say that from the Gemara it sounds that the reason is that it will lead to Avodah Zarah. The Gemara did not stop at intermarriage. And if the person is Lo Aleinu, someone who's totally abandoned the path of Yiddishkeit and has become completely irreligious, or has even worse, become a Mumar La Avodah Zarah, then that can certainly be a problem. Or even if they're just not religious, it could lead you to the problem with the intermarriage that the Gemara had is that what kind kind of influence is your spouse going to have on you? And if it's someone who's non-religious, so that could be a very negative influence on the person. People are very, very much influenced by the people they spend most of their time with, and no one more so than their spouse. So we're very much influenced in that way. Someone once, one of my Rebbeim once told me, he said, after I had done something good, I don't remember what I had done good, but it was I once in my life once did something good, and one of my Rebbeim said, "It's not you. We all know it's not you. You made one right decision in your life. You married the right person." And that was, put me right back in my place. And MS, Moda, right? That's the, that has a profound influence on a person's life. And that's, in fact, of Sturmbach and Tshuvas V'Hanhagos in Chelek Aleph, Siman Tav Ayin, says that it's mostly really about staying away from a lifestyle that would be contrary to Torah. And therefore, even pass of non-religious Jews might be a problem. So this brings us to the issue of pas palter. See, there are three categories of bread. There's what's called pas akum, there's pas palter, and there's pas balabais. Pas akum is a general term. It refers to any bread baked by a non-Jew. The original gzeirah of Chazal was pas akum is aser. Pas palter refers to bread baked by a baker, a professional baker, the owner of your local bakery. Pas balabais is your neighbor, your friend, who happens to be non-Jewish and bakes bread. So when we talk about pas palter and pas balabais, we're talking about cases, obviously, where everything is kosher. The only issue is, who made it? So the Shulchan Aruch in Sif Beis and Kuvyud Beis Paskins, based on the Rambam, that if there's no Jewish baker around, then you're allowed to buy bread from a non-Jewish baker even, because in a Shas Adchak you're allowed to do that. Meaning, the Gezerah of Pas Akum does not apply if it's a baker's bread, meaning not just your friend, it's a professional baker, and there are no Jewish bakers in town. So if no Jewish bread is available, you're allowed to buy bread from a baker. The Ramah, however, argues on the Shulchan Aruch, and he allows bread from a non-Jewish commercial baker, even if there is a Jewish bakery in town. And this is what we rely on. We rely on this Ramah, that we, throughout the year, will buy bread in the supermarket that is made by non-Jewish companies, we'll buy donuts, we'll buy all sorts of pastries that are made by non-Jewish companies, because it's made by non-Jewish companies. It's not made by non-Jewish individuals who we have a relationship with. It's a business thing. These people are running a business. So as a result of that, the Rama Paskins, that's not included in the Gezerah of Pas Akum, and that is therefore permissible. Pas Balabais, though? Ooh, the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama agree, no way. You're not allowed to buy or eat bread from your non-Jewish friend or neighbor. And that's a real concern of Chasnus or Avodah Zarah or whatever the concern is. There is one opinion of the Ra'a that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that if a city has absolutely no commercial baker, there's nowhere else to get your bread, then you can even buy from your non-Jewish neighbor. But nevertheless, it seems that that's rarely the case. Rarely do we have such a shaila. So now, what defines what's a palter versus a balabais? You know, palter, we have this big heter. If it's a baker, if it's a professional, you're allowed to buy from them. If it's just your friend, you're not allowed to buy from them. So the Rama explains that the way to determine if the bread is pas palter or pas balabais is, why is this person baking it? Are they baking it for a business? Or are they baking it because they enjoy baking and they want to share it with the people that they love and the people that they like and the people that they connect with? If they're baking it for a business, even if it's out of their own kitchen, sometimes people run businesses that start out of their own kitchen. You ever watch Shark Tank, right? They all started out of someone's garage, right? And the next thing you know, they're a multi-dollar business. So you have, especially when it comes to food production types of companies. I have nieces that live two blocks away from me. I started a business of baking cakes just because they enjoyed baking. And then people started ordering, and now they have a business. So if it's done for business purposes and not just because your friends, that's pas palter. But if it's done for people without charging any price for the products, then it's pas balabais, and that would therefore be prohibited. So there is one other category. So we have what? We have pas akum is just a general term. Pas palter, we said, for Ashkenazi Jews is going to be permissible even when there is a Jewish option. For Sephardi Jews, only when there's no Jewish option. right? Pas balabais, always aser, unless you assume like the Ra'ah that there's mamish no other choice. But typically we assume always aser. What about factory bread? Meaning, is there a difference between a local baker versus a factory? This is a major discussion in contemporary poskim. There was a great posek that lived in Memphis, Tennessee for many years before he made Aliyah and lived in Har Nof, and he passed away recently, Rav Ephraim Greenblatt, the Tshuvos Rivavos Ephraim. He was one of the leading Talmidim of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichron Levracha, and in the Tshuvos Rivavos Ephraim, Chelek Heis, and Tavkov Tzadivav, I think they say Rav Ephraim taught, I think, the second or third grade in Memphis, in the day school in Memphis, for decades and decades. And then after he finished teaching the little children, he'd come home and there would be faxes would come in with shilas from all over the world. And he would sit there writing tshuvas all day, answering all of these shilas. And he published, I think, over a dozen volumes, probably more, of Rivavel Sefraim as a second or third grade Rebbe. Pretty good. You know, sometimes people talk about Rebbeim of young children, like, oh, they teach Aleph Beis, so they must only know Aleph Beis. No, if you know, very often there are significant Talmidei Chachamim that just happen to be teaching, the basics. But anyway, in the Tshuvos Rivavos Ephraim, he quotes his Rebbe, Rav Moshe Feinstein, who said, and this is quoted in one of the Masorah journals as well, that factories are more lenient than a baker. In a factory, it's not just that the person who you know that's baking is doing it for business reasons and not to socially connect. You don't know who the person is that's baking. More than that, not only do you not know who the person is that's baking your bread, you couldn't ever find them. If you were like eating an Entenmann's donut, you know, the ones with the crumbs on the top, right? They used to come in packs where there was the white powder ones, the ones with those delicious crumbs on the top, and chocolate ones, and then they had like these plain ones. So I don't know why they made the plain ones, maybe just for comparison's sake, like who in the world would waste the calories on the plain ones? So like you'd always have the box. Every time my mother would buy it when I was a kid. So the first thing, the crumb ones were gone. Then we moved down to the powder. Then we moved down to the chocolate, and the plain ones ended up getting thrown out because they got stale. So you're eating those donuts with the little crumb things, those little chunks of, I don't know what they're called, on top. And you're like, this is delicious. I need to speak to the person and say thank you. You're on some Hakaras HaTov kick. You just heard some sort of Musar Shmuz about how you need to have Hakaras HaTov for everybody. So you decide, I'm going to call them up. I'm going to call up Entenmann's, and I would like to thank the person who baked my donut. Good luck. You're not going to find the person who baked your donut. Not only is the person who baked it not doing it for the sake of the relationship, the relationship is not even a possibility. There's no chashash of chasnus. And in that case, Rav Moshe thought that the bread is going to be permitted, even according to the Shulchan Aruch, even when there are Jewish bakers around. And that's based on the Ra'ah, who says that when there's no chashash of ikrive daita, of getting to know one another on a personal basis, then Chazal never made that gezera. So both Ashkenazim and Sfardim would be allowed to eat bread from a non-Jewish factory, just not from a local non-Jewish bakery. However, Rav Vadi Yosef in Yabia Omer says that you should not rely on this kula unless you have some other reason to be lenient. You could use it as what's called a sniff in halacha. You can combine it with some other reason to be lenient. And all of that brings us to Aser Simei Tshuva. Now, what happens in Aser Simei Tshuva? There are certain times that even though we are make year-round to have pas palter, there are certain times when we try to be machmir not to have pas palter. One such time, the Shach in Sifkat and Tess in Simon Kuf Yud Beis says that even though the Ramah is Mekel and you're allowed to have Pas Palter even when there's a Jewish baker around, you should be machmir not to buy from the non-Jew unless his bread at least tastes better. If his bread is not tastier, so then buy from the Jew. Then it's better to buy from the Jew. But the most famous exception to this rule, the Shach quotes in Simon Kuf Yud Beis in Yardaya that during Aseres Yimei Tshuva, one should be machmir not to have Pas Palter. The Shulchan Aruch brings that din of the Shach in Or Chaim Simon Tafresh Gimel in the halachos of Yom Kippurim of Aseres Yimei Tshuva, and we're only Mekel and Pas Akum in general because Pas Akum is a difficult thing to observe. But for 10 days, what's the big deal? For 10 days, we could suck it up and not have the Entenmann's donuts, and we'll be able to avoid Pas Palter. Mishnah Brura comments that if the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, if it's Aseres Yimei Tshuva, and you can't find bread baked by a Jew within a distance of four meal, then you're allowed to buy bread from a non-Jewish baker. And the reason is that even those who are machmir, not to eat paspalta during the year, aren't machmir when there's no pas Yisrael available. So during Aseret Yemei Teshuva, the chumra is to do what those who are machmir do, what those who are machmir the whole year do. And even those who are machmir the whole year, if there's no pas Yisrael available, will eat pas palter. So we could do that as well if there's no pas Yisrael available. The question is, how broad is this? What does it include? Like, what are you not allowed to eat? Are Cheerios included? Should you not eat cereals during Aseret Yemei Teshuva? So the Ramah and the Taz suggest that cookies, pasaba bekisnin, are certainly included in the gzera of pasakum, because if you eat enough of them, you'd have to bench. So it would seem that you should be machmir not to eat significant mezonos. But it's important to realize that not every mezonos food requires birchas hamazon, even if you eat very large quantities of it. What requires benching and what doesn't is a big discussion in Or Chaim Simukuf Samaches. The general rule is that if the mezonos products like cookie, dough baked with lots of sugar, jelly filling, if they're made by making a thick batter of dough and have what's called tsura sapas, toar lechem, they have a form of bread, a shape of bread, the substance of bread, then they require birchas hamazon if you consume them in large quantities. Cheerios? So that's a machlokas quoted by the contemporary poskim. Cereals, Rosham Zalman thought that they also have tsura sapas. Now, not every cereal. Cereals like Cheerios, more substantive cereals, might have tsura sapas. Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg thought they don't have tsura sapas, and they could be eaten during Aseret Yemei Teshuva. Lemaisa, there are many that are machmir that don't eat even certain cereals during the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, but certainly if one wants to be mekel, you have what to rely on. Rav Shechter certainly is mekel on Cheerios and shredded wheat and things like that. And because of the lack of tsuras hapas, something like a crepe does not have a tawar lechem, a tsuras hapas, and therefore you'd be allowed to have that during Aseret Yemei Teshuva as well. There is one other case besides for Aseret Yemei Teshuva when we're machmir about pas palter, and that is the Ramah in Or Chaim Siman Reish Mem Beis says that there's a minag to make a special challah for Shabbos. Right, to dafka bake challah for Shabbos, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes from Magen Avraham that even if you're mekel to eat pas palter during the week, you should refrain from eating pas palter on Shabbos, not only for Lecha Mishnah, but at any point on Shabbos. You should refrain from pas, and keep in mind, this includes cookies. Now, why is it that Jews the world over celebrated when we discovered that Oreo cookies, even though they say O-U-D, are really only O-U-D-E, the typical Oreos, the ones that are chocolate on the outside, white on the inside, or double stuffed, or triple stuffed, or stuffed till you vomit stuffed, right? Those Oreos. But the ones that have like chocolate stuffing inside, I think actually are dairy. But the typical Oreo cookies. Why do we celebrate? Because it's a great Shabbos party food. It's a great dessert food. You want to include it. You want to make an Oreo cake for dessert after your meal. If it's only DE, then you're okay. But we may have another problem, because if Oreo cookies are pas palter, so if you hold like Rav Moshe, that it's the companies that are making it, and the company is so far removed from you that it's not a problem at all, okay, good, then you have what to be makel with. Rav Moshe, interestingly, did not write this in a tshuva. It's only by word of mouth that we have this from Rav Moshe. But if you don't hold like that, then it is a totally appropriate chumrah on Shabbos to avoid pas palter, to avoid bread made by non-Jewish companies, by non-Jewish bakers. In fact, years ago, not that many years ago, a few years ago, you guys probably all know the illustrious Rabbi David Bashefkin, who's very closely affiliated with our yeshiva, and by that I mean he teaches in our yeshiva among the thousands of things that he does. So Rabbi Bashefkin used to write a column in Mishpacha magazine, where he would have like top fives, five something. So he had one column which was top five Shabbos party foods. So on his Shabbos party foods, top five Shabbos party, he had these Stella Doro cookies, the ones with the chocolate in the middle. People have all different names for it. call them belly button cookies or whatever. I don't know what people's belly buttons look like, if that's what they call it, but you know, different, you know, with the chocolate in the middle. So he had those on the list of top five Shabbos party foods, and like that resonated with a lot of people. Yeah, we used to always have that for Shabbos party. You remember when they threatened to make those dairy, and the Orthodox community reacted as if like this was a gzeiras hashmad, and you know, we started petitions and letters. And so yeah, that's a Shabbos party food. So at that time, Rabbi Natanael Wiederblank Shlita and his shir were learning some of these halachos of Pas Akum, and they wrote a letter to Mishpacha magazine that while Rabbi Vashevkin had identified the Stella Dora cookies as a Shabbos party food, it might be appropriate for one to be machmir not to have those Stella Dora cookies based on this this comment of the Mishnah Brura that we should try to avoid having it. So you know, this is one of those things. You could hear many shirim. You know, there's not much that makes me special as a Magid shir. You could hear many shirim about Pas Akum. No one's going to have that maramakum for you. That's a maramakum just stuck out in my head. So that is the third circumstance during which we try to be machmir about this. But this all brings us to the question, and with this we'll get to a little bit of hashkafa. What's the point? What is it with all of these chumras, that we have during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva? We take upon ourselves, and by the way, one has to be very careful. Not every chumra, you know, there are poskim that point out, there are chashulchan and others, that one has to be very careful that the chumra that you take upon yourself actually be just that, a chumra. If it's something that Me'ikar Adin may be required, and you're just holding like those poskim that say that Me'ikar Adin is required, even though the rest of the year you're holding like poskim that hold that it's not required, then it could take on the status of a neder, and you're stuck with it, meaning then you have to do Ataras Nedarim, and we are very sensitive about Nedarim. We do not like to violate Nedarim. You know, the first thing we do on Yom Kippur is Kol Nidre. We worry about our Nedarim. We do Ataras Nedarim on different Menagim of Rosh Hashanah of Yom Kippur. We do Ataras Nedarim this time of year. The Gemara tells us Bavon Nedarim Bana Mesam Kshem Ktanim, that Nedarim, there's a whole paragraph in Sechs Ksuvas that a woman is a Nadronis. If a woman takes too many Nedarim, the husband could divorce her without a Ksuba. She's considered to have destroyed the marriage just based on Nedarim. Based on Nedarim, we're very serious about Nedarim. So what are we doing over here? We're going to pretend that we're all these things. I'm going to take a Tainus Dibor. I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara throughout the entire Aseres Yimei Tshuva. Usually those things are the same thing, right? It's the only way to accomplish one is the other. So I'm going to be very, very careful about this hanhaga or the other hanhaga. I'm going to I'm going to learn Torah. I'm going to just see or something, whatever the person takes upon themselves. Who are we kidding? We know what we are. We know what we do, and we know what we're going to be doing in a week from now, right? We know what's going to be happening. So there is a discussion amongst the Balei Machshava what the idea is. Rav Yisrael Salanter is quoted by the other Balei Musar, where he says, what do you mean, who are we kidding? That's a wrong-headed kind of approach. Meaning, for a person to say, if I can't change forever, then I can't change, then you're never gonna make any changes in life, because forever is a very long time. To make a commitment forever. You know, I used to teach for many years. I had the great, great schus of teaching in a boys' high school called DRS in the Five Towns. And my first year teaching in DRS, I attended a siyum on Seder Moed. That was a Talmud Bavli Seder Moed made by Rabbi Shlomo Klapholz. And Rabbi Klapholz told the story when he made the siyum. He made the siyum for the boys in the yeshiva. At that point, there were only 9th and 10th graders. The yeshiva hadn't grown to an 11th and 12th grade yet. And he said at the siyum that, he said, how do you finish the entire Talmud Bavli Seder Moed? That's a lot. It's a lot of dapim. So he said that once when he was a kid in camp, he was shooting around by the basketball court on Erev Shabbos, and he hit a shot, and then from the foul line. So they gave him courtesy. He hit another shot from the foul line. So they gave him a courtesy shot, another shot, and another shot. And then finally someone said to him, I forget the exact number, but someone said, oh my gosh, Saul just hit 36 straight foul shots. And he's like, what? And he airballed the next one. He missed the next one. Right? What was his message? No one could hit 37 straight foul shots, but everyone could hit one. And you hit one, and you'll hit the next one. Says Rav Yisrael Salanter, you don't think every little bit counts? Every little bit, even if it doesn't seem to have made a lasting impression on your life. Of course it matters. It changes a person. It changes your neshama in a way that may be imperceptible even to you. I can tell you with the Daf Yomi, how many people came up to me just recently I said, you know, last time, last cycle, I started, I made it through Brachos Daf, whatever, Daf Lamed. Or I made it through Masechus Brachos, but that's where I stopped. So this time I said to myself, if I could do it for 2 months and make it through Brachos, why can't I do it for 4 months or 6 months? And this time I did a little more. For 7 years, they did nothing. It made no impact on them. It was nothing. But it's not nothing. Every little bit makes an impact. Every little bit that we do counts for something, and it really genuinely changes us. Another approach is that, you know, the people get dirty and sweaty, and therefore we have this thing called bathing. We shower and we bathe and we clean ourselves off. You ever argue with a child why they should take a shower? You need to take a bath. Why? I'm just going to get dirty again tomorrow. No, that's a good taina. Just going to get dirty again tomorrow, right? So maybe the grime should just grow and grow and grow to the mikveh Yisrael Hashem. Yeah, we may have not behaved so well in the past year, and you know what? We may get dirty again tomorrow. Is that a reason not to shower? A person would never ever make their bed. Their whole life would be a mess, and it would be in total disarray. Those points of connection where we're able to come close to the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, I'm still here. I'm checking in, Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm still with you. And yeah, I may get dirty again tomorrow, but I'm still with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's also worth something. That gives us our bearings. We understand where we belong. And third, when we do something differently, even if it's the particular practice, let's say paspalter, is something that is not going to stick with us long term. What we've done is we've shown ourselves that we can do things differently, that we are capable of change, that we're able, and maybe the change won't be so big like paspalter. Maybe it will be something much smaller. But we've proven to ourselves over the course of 10 days that change is something that we are capable of. So whether it be this change or something else, it's an exercise in self-improvement, and an understanding that we have the capability for self-improvement. You know, we always, the easiest mashal to use, although it's a little bit of a lazy mashal, but it's just the easiest one because it fits the best in terms of working on self-discipline and the like, is when people try to eat healthy and exercise. And, you know, if how many people say, I can't do it. I just can't live without eating junk food. You know, I know a guy who I can only guess what he weighed at the time that he made this comment, but he said, you know, I make sure that I get 4,000% of my recommended daily value of saturated fat and my recommended daily value of red number 6 and you know, blue number 4 or whatever. He just ate garbage all day. Like that's what I live on. That's all I can eat. And then one day he had some health issues and it woke him up. And he was able to change. People are capable of change. We don't often do it, but we don't often believe in ourselves. And this just gives us that little something. Believe in yourself. You can do it. We can all change. And then finally, the approach I once heard b'shem Rav David Feinstein, Shlita Yishev, Rafur Shlema Bekarov, that, you know, a chassan and a kala go to their wedding. So what happens? The chassan, you know, gets a brand new suit or a tuxedo, and he gets dressed up, and is you know, he wears cufflinks. He's never seen a cufflink before in his life. All of a sudden, he's wearing cufflinks, and everything is just so. Sometimes he even has those cufflinks on the shirt. I don't know what they call those. You know, those. And he's you know, some of my fancier friends had tails. They were wearing tails, right? They get all dressed up. Akala, you know, spends I don't know. Hours in makeup before the wedding with a hair stylist and a makeup artist and I mean, you know, in a week from now you're going to wake up and that's not going to be the person that's next to you, right? That's not what the other person's going to look like. Do we ever ask a question? Who are you fooling? Right? We don't ask the question at Jewish weddings. If anyone has any objections, speak now, forever hold your peace. We don't ask that at Jewish weddings. But can you imagine if they did and someone would say, I object. He's a slob. He never looks like that. He's an absolute mess. He leaves his clothing all over the floor. I was his roommate. I know. Yeah, he's looking all neat now. He combed his hair. He shaved. I actually didn't. But he you know, that now he looks all neat and all put together and everything. Or that, she doesn't look like that normally. Her hair is a mess. It's all over the place. Wait till there's a light drizzle. You think her hair is going to look like that? No way. It's a, you know, but it's, we don't think it's at all inappropriate. Why? because it would be disrespectful to your wedding day to not at least take it seriously enough to get dressed up. It's not that we're pretending. There are times in life where a person is supposed to put themselves together a little bit more. And spiritually, when we approach the Yemei HaDin, we have to put ourselves together a little bit more. We're not pretending. We know who we are. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows who we are. We're not fooling anybody. But we're approaching a time in life where this is a time where we pull ourselves together. And we make sure that we're neat. And we make sure that we put our best foot forward. And we prepare ourselves. And we make sure that we present properly. We know we're not fooling Hashem. But how disrespectful would it be to the Ribbono Shel Olam if we just go in cold? We just go into the Yemei HaDin with no preparation, with nothing changed, with nothing different? That would be absolute disrespect. So that's why we're approaching the Yemei HaDin in this way. So again, we discussed many of the halachic aspects of Pas Palter, Pas Akum, and the idea of where the halacha comes from year-round and how it applies during the Aseres Yemei Teshuva. But then we also discussed the Hashkafic aspects of why it is that it's appropriate to take on something new during this time of the year. And Bezos Hashem, we should be Zocha to take on something new this time of the year, and whatever sticks, whatever little bit we gain from it is a win. Every little bit is a victory, and in the zechus of all of the things that we have done, and all of the new things that we will do, and all the old things that we'll continue to do in our service of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we should all be zocha to ksiva v'chasima tova for us and for all of Klal Yisrael and all of humanity.
Amen. Thank you.